You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
So anyway, I do my audition with Ozzy. Ozzy comes on the next day. Ozzy comes in. We change studios, and we go to a big studio. It had a massive stage on it. And I did five songs, including a guitar solo. And I sit down with them after, and they said, well, Jimmy, here's the deal. It's between you and Zach. And, you know, if they didn't like me, they didn't have to say, you know, say that. But they said, it's between you and Zach. And they took me out to dinner at this really exclusive place. I went back to Ozzy's bungalow. Then Randy Castile took me to the Troubadour. It was just an amazing experience. But then I was on a plane home the next day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Benny Goodman. Take two. Not to you, but for everybody on this. I'm sorry already. This is 2020, which is what you just got. If you haven't been subscribing, it's 2020-D.com. You can go to the YouTube and actually watch us, which maybe makes us more enjoyable and palpable, or maybe not. When I introduce my cohorts, Corey Paza and Siobhan Cronin, you can have faces to the names. Hi, guys.
Yeah, you might not prefer our faces, though, and you can always listen on Spotify or anywhere else.
I quite enjoy the video, though. And speaking of that, definitely tune in today, part two with Jimmy Bell. Go check out part one if you haven't listened yet. Amazing energy. So great to talk to him again. Such a cool guy.
Jimmy Bell is like a coffee bean, but on behalf of all guitars.
Indeed.
Yeah, sure. So here it is, part two with Jimmy Bell. Hello, welcome back to another episode of 2020. My name is Corey Paza, here as always with Benny Goodman and Siobhan Cronin. How you guys doing?
What's up?
Good. I'm super excited that I finally get to meet, along with you. Well, you guys have met him in person, but our guest today, part two with Jimmy Bell of Autograph. I've loved following you on Facebook. I've loved being on an album with you. So sad that
three
I haven't got to meet you. Yeah,
three
fucking albums. Okay, fine. A project. But it's so cool to meet you and talk to you. If you haven't listened to part one, go check it out, 2020-D.com. Amazing stories from Jimmy in the first episode. I'm really excited to keep talking about more things in part two.
Yeah, so thanks for coming back.
It's been a pleasure meeting you as well. Like I said earlier, it's a real shame that show didn't happen, because I know extremely excited that you were going to be there. I said, I'm going to get to finally meet her in person, you know, because we missed each other over at Benny's house a couple times. If Benny was closer, I mean, I don't think people really realize how far Benny is from me, but but I don't mind, because that's why when I go there to record,
we got shit done though. We got three albums worth of stuff. We even did Tracy G's stuff at my house.
Yeah, I did
from
Tracy
Dio.
G's record at your house.
Tracy, and by the way, that song was badass. Tracy gave us a song, which, by the way, you know, by comparison to Let Us Pray, which is like literally homework to figure out the solos. It's amazing, but it's like very hard to understand. Tracy G's like all straight groove, like blues, like straight heavy groove. And you just played over that, and I remember Tracy calling me like, dude, this is the best thing ever, and like he was so happy, and I'm like, I was so happy because you just gave him everything he wanted, and he was like, you gave him Christmas.
You gotta understand, like, you know, get a message from Dio's ex guitar player, I'm going, what? You know, Tracy G,
he thanked me for you.
Hey, I mean, there's so many, you know, there's so many things that have been really weird since joining Autograph. You know, hanging out with all these other bands that we play with all the time, like Winger and Slaughter, and I've met so many wonderful people, and they're all the same. They're all like wicked, wicked nice. You know, these people that you don't really realize how nice. Someone like Mark Slaughter, for example, is like one of the nicest guys I've ever talked to, and he's a gearhead. So he'll sit and talk about, he wanted to come in the dressing room. First time that I actually got to physically meet him, we were talking on stage. He goes, let me come check out your guitars. I go, well, I'm left-handed. He goes, well, I want to see him anyway. You know, so he's like that. He talks about pedals and everything. So, and wonderful, wonderful person. And then And his guitar player, oh my God, he's so good. He plays, he does for Vince Neil too. He plays for Vince and everybody. Just absolutely Blando. He's just amazing, great guy. And of course, I ended up doing a bunch of shows with Winger and becoming friends with them, and actually having a nice conversation with Kip Winger in the hallway. And all these guys like playing with Autograph. I think because of the fact that we're very easygoing, very easy to get along with. Like, I guess, you know, they probably deal with other bands that aren't as easy to get along with. And we just let everything, you know, oh, you want this?
Neil.
You know, it's like, that's the way you got to do it when you're doing this. But one of the biggest thrills is like hanging out with Reb Beach. It's like, I've met him a bunch of times because my buddy Mikel Luby plays keyboards for Whitesnake. So I met him and Joel and Reb a bunch of times. And of course, Joel, I went to see with Trans-Siberian.
Yeah, I know. Joel Hoekstra.
Yeah, yeah. He's just absolutely incredible.
Siobhan's like, I play with him.
On guitar. Insane. Yeah. But, you know.
Siobhan's like, tell me more. I
no,
play
he's,
with him
I just
arenas.
When I think of Joel Hoekstra, his hair is so long and he is so tall. He's like a giant, like, human being. He's so tall, and like when he's on stage, he just like does this crazy power stance, and his hair is like touching the floor.
Yeah, he's got the stances, doesn't he? He's got
he's a performer for sure. He definitely
he's
a showman.
Great performer. You know, that's now talk about a guy that's like really lucked out with gigs. I mean, I mean, right from you know. Rock of Ages into Night Ranger into Whitesnake into Cher. I mean, come on, who wouldn't want to play guitar for Cher? That's like the most amazing gig ever, you know. But you know,
dude, imagine being behind that ass for 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's you're bad,
so
Betty.
Bad.
You know, she's the Tony Iommi of the Cher band.
Oh, really?
She's got to stand in the middle, you know, like Tony. Like Black Sabbath, you don't remember that? Ozzy wasn't allowed to stand in the middle. Tony had to be in front. You know,
well, that was the old Sabbath thing. If you notice old Sabbath videos, Ozzy's singing from the side of the stage. Mm-hmm. That's a really weird thing. You know, it's like
that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Ozzy, when Black Sabbath first got together, it was the three guys, and Ozzy was over on the side. Very kind of strange, but anyways, you know, so I became, you know, friends with Reb, and you know, watching Reb play is just absolutely amazing. Nicest guy ever. And you know, we've actually, he loves the way I play guitar because him and I don't play anything alike. So and Joel's like that too. They go, you give me your picking hand, and I go,
well,
give me your
well, they're legato guys. Like they're like wicked, like they pull offs and all that. And you're like, no, must do it harder. Must pick 17 notes for every pull off that Hoekstra does. Like that's the thing is because you know even the you're a guitarist because you know you'll go to a guy like Matt LaPierre who is again a younger guy that has mixed all these new school techniques and he's in his at an age where he's grown up watching YouTube so he's like a sponge he like can do all like these finger tapping things but then the sweep picking and you're like I could never do what he does but like you know Matt being a realist is like but I could never pick like that ever. And no human being can. And that's the thing is, you have figured out how to do every technique that everyone else does with some simple way just by picking. You're like, I'll just pick through it. Alcoholism, I'll pick through it. Bad day, just pick through it. I'm just going to pick through it.
Yeah. It was just something, you know, the picking was one of these things like, you know, there was a couple directions I could have went, you know, back in the day. Like I said, there was no YouTube. There was no computers. There was nothing. Everything I did was putting a record on and trying to listen and taking the needle off. I mean, you got to understand, you know, and even a cassette. I had so many albums that I, you know, I tried to put on cassette so I could stop, rewind, instead of picking the needle off the record and going back and forth. That's all I had. That's how I, you know, I didn't have the luxury of what these young guitar players have, you know, it's like they
notes
really
on a paper that tell you everything.
Well, just What's videos that? Of everything. You can have tutorials. So, yeah, no, you're right, though. It's wild.
I'm saying you can just read music, and it'll tell you everything you need to know.
And you go and look up certain things. Like, if you want to learn something, it's like there's 1,000 guys playing the same thing. So you could go to one and say, and some of these guys shouldn't even be posting videos. But they'll post and you'll say, okay, I don't like that one. And then you'll find one and go, hey, that's pretty good, you know. I've actually done it when I have to learn something in cover songs now. Because I just don't want to sit down and put the cover song on and try to figure it out.
I hate you?
Somebody else play it, you know?
Listen, yeah. You're a Richie Blackmore fan, and we did Gates to Babylon, okay? And I had Joey Concepcion play guitar, and I insisted on playing guitar. And I have tutorials, I have all this other stuff, and yet I play it, I think I've locked in, I think I've done a great job. Corey calls me, he goes, you know you're a half step off on this one note.
And I'm every like, time of the riff.
Fuck me! Because it's so hard to hear exactly what he's doing because he changes it up just a little every time. And I have Pro Tools where I can press, like, you know, space bar shift or whatever the fuck it is and slow it down. And meanwhile, I'm like, I still fuck it up. And I even have Joey Concepcion playing it perfectly in my left ear. And I still can't hear it. And meanwhile, you're like, Blackmore, I play it every night.
Well, the songs like that, though, see, the thing is, what I love about Richie Blackmore, I styled a lot of my playing like that. Not that I copied Richie Blackmore, but I think like him. In other words, I don't play...
You're a warlock?
Solo. I don't play the same solo all the time every night. I like to take chances. Richie would take chances all the time. I mean, he does some things that I kind of wouldn't do sometimes. Like, he would just go off instead of playing the signature part of Highway Star, you know, that bit, you know, the really, he wouldn't even play that.
He just gets lazy.
Totally different. You know, he would be, if he was in a shitty mood, he wouldn't, you know, he would play whatever the hell he wants to play. And it wouldn't be, it would be something totally different than what he recorded. Mm-hmm. I won't go quite that crazy, but I will always, you know, I will always take chances, and that's not bad, because, you know, you're not going to learn if you don't take chances. You know, that's the best thing. You know, if I do something and it doesn't come out good, and then you go, okay, well.
But Jimmy, all these guitar players, okay, so one of the things that makes, in my opinion, and Corey and I have talked about it as we've seen Slash play, one of the things I love about Slash is, like, you know, everybody in the world in every cover band covers Paradise City or, you know, Sweet Child O' Mine, but not even Slash plays it the same way, not once, ever, every, it's like he's still figuring out kind of like what to do, just kind of like Blackmore, but also Jimmy Page. Like, if you listen to Jimmy Page from one night, he's fucking sucked. And then another night, you're like, wow, even Eddie Van Halen, I one time saw him, like, miss an entire verse of, I think it was Atomic Punk, just gone. They're like, okay, he's just not going to play the verse. All right. But, like, and then other nights where he was just fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of those things that I feel like part of being the best is not being played by numbers or necessarily being like, are you just doing it? Like, if Aerosmith just played Aerosmith live or Night in the Ruts live, it wouldn't sound what makes Aerosmith so great. Aerosmith, you know, for example, is a band, or Led Zeppelin was a band that if you go listen to them, they would take it to the next level. And I feel like you do that every time you play, every solo and every take for Lost Symphony. It's like, we should use that one. And Corey's like, but what do you think three more will sound like? I don't know, man.
I don't mind doing that, though. You guys, like I said, in the other episode, you guys bring out some amazing stuff for me. And I, you know, let's put it this way. If I'm driving all the way to your house, I'm not in a hurry to get out of there. Yeah. you might as well just, you know, take advantage of me while I'm there, you know?
Yeah, I think we definitely did, and it came through on the records. So everyone who's listening right now, LostSymphony.com, our sponsor, go buy all three.
He's on all three records, yeah. Chapters 1, 2, and 3. And listen, all you need to do is listen to one song, any song, and it tells you the liner notes. Go read the liner notes. If you see Jimmy Bell solo, now close your eyes for the rest of the three records, and you'll know. You will know every solo because he is the most distinctive player. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, Paul Gilbert, I Gary Cherone told me something, and I'm paraphrasing, but he played with, I asked him one time, like, he played with Paul Gilbert, Eddie Van Halen, and Nuno Betancourt. And I was like, dude, what's it like playing with all those fucking guys? And he said, even, you know, Paul Gilbert, even though he could play everything, is still like, well, you know, Eddie and Nuno sound like Eddie and Nuno right off the bat. And he's right. Like, Paul Gilbert is a Jedi guitarist, but it's not like he's Jeff Beck, where from the first bend, you're like, that's Jeff Beck, you know? And I feel like with you, Jimmy, like, you have that from the first pick, from the first time that pick hits the string, you're like, that's Jimmy fucking Bell. You don't have, you could be doing a dive bomb, you could be doing a slide solo, you could be just doing some shred thing. You and that's how I know, because Paul forgets everything. And again, it's the first time from every time. Who is that? Don't you know by now? If you have to ask me, it's Jimmy fucking Bell.
Anytime you need an ego boost, Jimmy, you just come on our show.
Oh, well, make sure. No, you know what? You know what? I've always, here's the thing. I've always strived for that. That was my main goal, was I didn't want to sound like anybody. And one of the best things that ever happened, out of the many wonderful things that happened, like back in the 80s, 1986 or 85, I was in Spotlight, the Spotlight column in Guitar Player magazine, and Mike Varney's Spotlight. And, you know, Mike Varney's Spotlight column, he would always do three guys, or, you know, three guitar players. And he would always say, this guy is a great player, sounds like, you know, like Yngwie, or has a lot of, sounds like this, sounds like that. You know, he'd always give some sort of a comparison. When he did my column, he didn't compare me to anybody. He just started talking about my technique, the stuff that I was doing, because I sent him a live solo. And he just went on and on about that, as opposed to, like, taking, you know, trying to say that I sounded like someone, because I just don't want to do that. That's why I've always created, like, I don't jump on bandwagons either. Like a lot of guys, like for example, we talked about this a little bit before, when Yngwie came out, everybody's jumping on Yngwie. All of a sudden you get a million guys playing neoclassical guitar. And I absolutely love that style, but it's not really my style. And I don't really, you know, I could play some of it. I could sweep arpeggios. I could play harmonic minor scales. I could play diminished scales. But it's just not what I like to play. So I don't do that. And a lot of times, and another example is like when Stevie Ray Vaughan got really popular, all of a sudden you saw all these guys jumping on the blues bandwagon, playing all this Texas shuffle, all this stuff. And everybody's buying Strats and playing some Fender amps with tube screamers. You know, I avoided all that. Even in the 90s, when there were no solos in songs, I purposely shredded even more because I was pissed off there were no solos in songs.
Hold on, so can we start a new video series, Shredding with the 90s with Jimmy Bell? Yeah. Shredded to the 90s with Jimmy 90s. Bell.
I didn't stop for nothing. I didn't care how drop tuned you could make your guitar. I didn't care if you could drop down to C or B or A. It didn't make a difference. I was still going to shred a solo. And that's just, you know, I like to just do what I like to do, you know?
Did you always have that perspective of like self being like really assured in your vision and yourself? Because that's something as a classical musician that I struggle with a lot, is like feeling like I need to be doing all the
ego.
Things that ego and doing the things that everyone else is doing. You know, it's really easy to get caught in that trap. And so did you always just have that in you, that you just had a vision and you didn't worry about what other people were doing?
I'm kind of focused, you know, one directional, you know, and that's pretty much how I've always, you know, I have something in mind that I've always wanted to do, you know, like I've always wanted to be on a big stage, play this, go, you know, and I wanted to always have this type of technique, because when I, you know, do things, that I hear that I happen to like, then that makes me happy if I'm able to play them. Like a lot of people can't even believe that I like country music as much. Like I play, you know, I'm always sitting playing chicken picking Albert Lee type things, or you know,
that's
Brent
horrifying.
Mason.
Whatever. Well, hold on. No, because guys like us, so I'm not a super country guy, but I know I'm not an idiot where I respect, where I know, like, you see, I've seen Brad Paisley live, and I'm like, okay, that dude's a fucking monster. And you go back and listen to all these country guys, and you're like, okay, and you go to Nashville once, and you're like, I can't even hang with any of these dudes. Like, holy fucking shit. But you, I wake up in the morning, and again, it's... where you could be doing all this Paganini, Yngwie, Richie Blackmore stuff. You're doing like all this chicken picking fiddle, like dancing to the devil. And it's like this crazy, if Al Di Meola, Brian Setzer, but then like just like a Gary Clark, just like Roy Clark, just got together. Roy Clark, you're like Roy Clark it. And that, and is that a good example? Because I feel like Roy Clark would just come up there and just shred
Roy
all
Clark
this fucking.
Is a shred country guy. Yeah, he played everything, banjo.
So that was the right. That was the right synapse. Okay.
Yeah, that was the right person. Yeah, I mean that's the thing that I like to do. I don't follow rules. I take chances, and like, you know, I've had some people.
That's the title.
Because I've posted so many country videos. They would say,
take chances.
Oh, what are you changing your style or this and that? I go, no, I just, this stuff makes me happy. When I play country stuff, I'm happy. I like tapping my toe. Once again, it all, you know, if I could tap my foot like this, it all goes back to AC/DC. If I could tap my foot to a song, that's what I like. A nice 2/4 beat, whether it's do, da, do, da, or do, da, do, da, do, da, do, da. That's what I like. Yeah.
That's awesome. You said something really interesting, that you had a pretty clear vision of what you wanted in life. And I'm just curious, at what point in your life or your career did you formulate that vision? Because I think that's something that's really common among successful people, is that they know they want to play this style on this type of stage for these type of people. You obviously have a very clear vision of what you like, what makes you happy, what you want to do. How early in your life did you have that?
Oh, very, very. I mean, right. You know, I started playing a little late. I started at 14 because, like I said, I was a drummer from the age 10 to 13. But once I did take up the guitar, it never left my hands. And my vision was, you know, I would see, I actually went and got to see Deep Purple before Ian Gillan left the first time. So I got to see him like in 1973. And I was at New Haven Coliseum in New Haven, Connecticut. And they came out with Highway Star, and there was, you know, they had the dry ice, the smoke all at their feet, and they're coming out. And I'm looking, and I'm watching the audience and seeing all these people just going insane. And I'm going, this is what I want to do. I said, that my dream, I got to be up on that stage doing that. And that was like before I even had developed my style of playing, before I even was taking elements of each guitar player to create my own style. I was like looking at Richie Blackmore going, I got to be on that stage. And then, you know, most of the time when I bought records throughout my career, I bought live albums because I wanted to hear the audience screaming, like Grand Funk. I bought Grand Funk's first live album before they had keyboard player. When they were just a three-piece band, and I loved Grand Funk. I was going like, oh my God, these guys, you know, and you hear the people going absolutely insane. That hearing the audience and just seeing something, you know, being at a show and seeing people's reaction to what it's like to be on that stage is what my dream always was. I'm going to tell you, I used to stand in front of my mirror when I was first learning, playing my guitar, pretending I was playing on a big stage. I'd be playing my guitar and looking in a mirror and going, you know, that this is
what
I
want.
You
know why that's important? Because I'll tell you, I'm the whitest, Jewiest guitarist ever. And when I was in a band, when I first got signed, I couldn't bang my head and play at a 4/4. It wasn't in me. I didn't have that feel where you just could like feel it. I just didn't. So, but my singer, who wasn't a musician, practiced doing all the stuff in front of the mirror. Remember all those new metal bands? And he would just go up and down and up and down. He's like, just practice. And I would sit there like a dance studio in front of my mirror trying to get it. And then I realized that that's super lame and dudes love that, but not chicks. And that's when I realized that you just need to stand with it like Zach Wilde between your legs, and then it makes it easier. But for a long time, it didn't come to me naturally. I watch you, and you do it so naturally. And I want you to know that not everybody has the ability to do that naturally, because I couldn't forever. I still can't.
Well, it's you know, when you play guitar as much as I play guitar, and
I do, but not good.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, but you got to understand, you do other things. You're not just a guitar player. You are a producer. You're a piano player. You're a DJ. You know, you do all kinds of stuff. I'm clearly one focus in my life. And you know, you could ask Mandy, there's not much other than playing guitar. I know how to
you know, well, that's why you have Mandy.
Hey, do you know how to fix this in the house? Do you know how to do it? I go, no, we're going to have to call somebody. But one of my buddies will come over and do it, you know. But you know, things like that, I never good. But, you know, I spent so much time. I'll tell you guys, I didn't really have any friends throughout my childhood. When I was playing guitar, I was not popular in school whatsoever. So when I started playing guitar, I would, you know, get up, play a little bit, go to school, come home, and I would bury myself in my room and play guitar until it was time to go to bed. Wake up, get as much time in playing before I went to school, go to school, and repeat. On the weekends, I wouldn't even leave my room. I'd be practicing 24 hours a day. That's how that's how dedicated and how much I wanted to play guitar. You know, yeah, Mandy says it. The guitar is my mistress.
Yeah, it's true.
That's amazing. I was going to ask one question that I thought of is, you're clearly like a morning person. Like, I'm always amazed you're up at whatever, 4 a.m., like shredding on guitar. It sounds like you've always kind of been that way. You're just
walking 12 miles a day.
No, but you were obviously so energized by the things that drive you. Like, I can just feel it in the way you talk about it.
I hate to say it, though, Savannah, but my mind doesn't shut off that easy. And that's like, for example, last week in the hotel at my show, sometimes I'll be in a hotel and. You know, I'll initially feel tired, and I'll lay down thinking that, oh, I'm going to go off. And then something in my mind will go. And then I start watching the clock, and you know, I have sleep machines going. I got noise apps and everything, you know, pillows over my head.
And everything's working to try and get you
everything,
to sleep.
trying everything I can because I don't take anything. And, you know, I don't drink at all because I can't. You could drink.
I was just like, I'm going to put my wine down.
No. I can't. So, I don't take anything to relax my mind or anything. So I try to go to bed early. Like right now, I would, you know, believe it or not, I'd probably be halfway asleep by now.
We're breaking your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, breaking because, you know. But I just wake up. There's something in my clock that, you know, I 4 o'clock, 3:30. You know, I've never been a guy, even when in my party days, and after gigs, I was never one of those guys that could sleep to noon. You know, it was either like, you know, 9 o'clock or whatever. It's just not in me.
It's called mania. It's called mania. That's how you're so successful. You don't sleep. You're like 4 hours. Like, and then I got to get up and practice more and walk 5 miles and all. You're productive. And that's the great thing is you're able to take all that shit. Cause the first thing, I've actually had 3 people this week ask me, how much do you sleep a night? And it's like 4 hours. I literally sleep 4 hours, but you make me tired. Vicariously, you make me tired. So but you use it for productivity. So why not?
You know, I'm a big Elvis Presley fan, and I've watched many interviews with Elvis. And I remember when Elvis was young and his career was just starting out, you know, someone says, how much sleep do you get? And he goes, oh, only about, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And the guy says, is that enough? And Elvis says, not really, but that's all I could sleep. You know, so, you know, even the king, you know, his mind, there was so much going on. And that's what happens. Like sometimes when I'm at a hotel, you know, we always arrive a day ahead of time at an autograph show. Never that we, unless we play and then have a next show the next day. But I always arrive a day ahead of time. And then sometimes I'll lay there and I'll start to fall asleep. And then all of a sudden I start thinking about something. And then the clock is getting to be 2, 3 or something like that. And I'm going, oh shit, I got a show. I got to be at sound check. Then, you know, sound check is at 12 o'clock. You know, that like, so at some points I'll end up, you know, being downstairs before they're serving breakfast at the hotel. Saying, can I get coffee? Can I get coffee? And then I'm starting my practice day. I have a guitar on my bed all the time, just so you know. There's a guitar next to me.
Okay, so it is really actually your mistress, is what you're saying.
Well, it is.
But you have obsessive thoughts. Those are like everything you're describing is obsessive thoughts, which is fine because you're using your OCD, your mania. That's mania.
Ben, this is
you're
not an analysis session. This is an interview.
No, it's fucking amazing. No, because that's how you become that good. I want to understand because how do you play
can't
with
understand
Marty Friedman
unless you listen
and Nuno okay. Betancourt? And still stick out every time. And it's Jimmy Bell.
Okay,
whatever
well,
you're running on.
Ben, okay. So, Jimmy, before Ben takes over the show, let me ask you this. I'm curious about your practice. What? So, you have a gig. There's a band you play with. You've got stuff that you've got to learn. But how do you schedule your practice? Like, what do you, when you wake up in the morning, like, what's your routine? I'm just interested to hear, like, what are you working on?
I just start going for it. I pick up the guitar and I just start seeing what my hands are doing. First, I do some stretches now. Something that's very good. I don't know if you be able to, I don't know if you can see the wall, but I do this, but with your arm totally stretched, palm upside down against the wall like this, fingers down, and you have your arm straight like this.
Yeah.
And you look like as if you're looking into a shirt pocket. So you turn your head completely opposite. So you got this.
It's a good forearm stretch.
Like this, and you hold it for a minute. But your hand's parallel, but you have to put it against the wall. And the thing about the thing that you want to do is you want to force the palm of your hand against the wall, and you want to pull. You want to try to make like you're pulling your body away. Okay, so you're trying to pull this way, but your hand is pinned against the wall.
Yeah.
You hold that for a minute. When you drop your hand, you'll feel blood rushing down like the warm. It's amazing what it does. And I do that for my fretboard hand. So you would do it for your right hand. But I do it for my – oh, no, you would do it for your left hand. Sorry.
The left hand, yeah.
Yeah, and I do it for my right hand. She just said that my doctor wife just said it's like putting a tourniquet on and releasing it. That's exactly what it's like.
It's like autoerotic asphyxiation for your hand.
Yeah. So I do that, and then I'll pick up the guitar and start, you know, and messing around. And I kind of like just start seeing what I could do right off the bat. And I don't hit it like a lot of times right away, but you know, the more I build it, but I'm
just
not
like improvisation. You're just kind of playing.
Yeah, yeah, I start going for it all over the neck, but I'm not one of these guys that'll turn on a metronome and go da 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 da, and then turn it up and you know, and start going like that. I don't even own a metronome. So I just go on 10. I just pick up the guitar. It's laying next to me. I do it in the middle of the night. Some night, if I can't sleep, I'll reach over, I'll grab the guitar like this, I'll put it on across me and start playing on my back. I can't tell you how many times I've fallen asleep with the guitar on my chest like this. Many times. With my reading glasses on, I'll have my reading glasses on and my guitar on my chest. And I wake up, I go, you know, it's like, what is this on my face? Oh, it's my reading glasses. How did, you know, I'm a train wreck.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. Before we get too far into any direction here, in the last episode, we kind of teased it, and I want to make sure we don't piss off any of Jimmy's fans that may be listening. You were going to talk about some of your experiences earlier in your career, and, you know, the the closeness to these different like elements of fame that you almost had. Can you dive a little bit more into, because we've really talked about your recent stuff.
I've had an amazing career, honestly. I'm very blessed. I really am. I'll give you the first thing was, I was in a band, locally called Joint Forces, and Joint Forces was the first band in the Connecticut area to do all original music, to just come out and do an hour and a half of original music and have two warm-up bands before us when we play. There were other bands doing original music, but they were doing originals and covers. They were mixing it. And we just said, to hell with it, we're going to take a chance and we're going to try this to see if it works. And the club owners were a little nervous about it. But, we all had good reputations. So we, okay, hold on. I forgot a big one. Hold on. I was with a production company before that in Canada. So here I am living in Montreal, Canada, and I'm working with a producer from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. This started my whole nightmare. Okay. So it was a lot of disappointments. So this was my first big disappointment.
Was it Canadian bacon? Was Canadian bacon on poutine, was, like the disappointment?
Yeah. Ugh. And learning how to say filet mignon. That was a tough one. And how they say egg. Oof. Oof. Or whatever it is. Anyways, I was in Canada, absolutely love Montreal, working with a producer that was with Emerson, Lake & Palmer. So we did all these demos and he absolutely loved us. Here I am. I'm recording at some big studio in old Montreal. Then he brings us to Les Studio, where Rush did all of their albums. The one that you see Neil Peart's drum kit out on the lake. I recorded there at that studio. So I'm, I was there and, we complete a record. He's going back and forth to New York. This guy starts working with us. He says, this band is going to be the next Led Zeppelin. Okay, so I'm going, this is incredible. We start rehearsing it. We start doing another bunch of songs at Mahogany Rush's studio. Frank Marino had a studio called Tempo Studios. So we're rehearsing there. And, so this went back and forth for a long time. 27 times this producer came back and said, the deal was signed, and then we'd be waiting and nothing. And I'd go, oh, they're just finishing up some more stuff on a contract. Finally, it was nothing. So I end up coming back to Connecticut, forming Joint Forces. So Joint Forces starts, we come out doing all original music and we get hooked up with Joan Jett's management company. Someone from Joan Jett's company, wanted to start his own production company, and he got a partner that had a tour bus. So that owned tour bus company. So here we are, a band that only had a 3-song cassette demo out. They put us out on tour with Joan Jett. We're on an East Coast tour with Joan. We weren't making any money, like $10 a day, but we had a tour bus, a beautiful one. So we're around, half of Joan's band is driving with us. And I became very good friends with Joan throughout that whole time. So we do that and everything's cool. Next thing you know, we get a phone call saying, hey, Joan is going to be in a movie with Michael J. Fox and Michael J. Fox. It's going to be called Light of Day and they need a band for the movie. So we had to send our promo stuff in and, they took it. Next thing I know, I'm flying to Chicago and I'm going to be in a national motion picture. We're all, our minds are blown, oh my God, so we go to the, we're at the Limelight in Chicago and meeting all these people. We met that porn star, Seika, whatever her name was back then from the 80s. She was at the club. Anyways, we met Michael and it was just great. So I'm on a movie set at 4 a.m. getting makeup and they made us kind of look like a Kiss type band and, eating lunch with Michael J. Fox, talking guitars. He loved the way I played guitar. So in that movie, Light of Day, he actually played guitar. He didn't play guitar in Back to the Future. but in light of day, he does. So we do this movie. I go to the, it comes out. I'm at the movie premiere party. I get out of his limousine in New York City at the Hard Rock Cafe. And we're standing on this roped off area, and the streets are lined with people and photographers. And I'm just standing there, at the red carpet, ready to go in for the party. And they say, "Hey, who are you?" And we said, we're joint forces. And then someone says, "Joint forces, you're the Huns in the movie." That was the name of the band, the Huns. All of a sudden, a million flashbulbs went off, like bam, 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 bam. It was like, I'd never seen anything like it because I never experienced that. It was like, oh my God, I grabbed my bass player. I was holding his arm so tight. I go, "This is fucking great." You know? For what? It was amazing. So, we walk in, we're talking Ron Wood was there, Carly Simon, so many people. Mel Schaefer was one of the one person I loved because he was just like he was on the David Letterman show. He was walking around with two girls on his arm, and he comes up to me and goes, "Hey, man, how you doing, babe? Everything good?" Just like he is on Letterman. It is just so funny. But, so after that, here we are in a motion picture. And, we figured that this guy would, the manager would take off with that, run with it. Nothing. He ends up going out and doing road managing for Joan Jett and just drops us and, forgets about it. So that was a big disappointment. I start working with this producer, Jack Ponte, who did stuff on the first Bon Jovi record. Really great guy. And he brings me over. He's in New Jersey. He brings me over to meet all the guys in Skid Row before they had Sebastian Bach. I go over to Rachel's house, the bass player, and they're practicing in his garage. So I met all the guys in Skid Row there, and we're talking, we're jamming. And then later on in that year, I'm jamming with Michael Monroe from Hanoya Rocks. I'm jamming with him someplace. And that's when my whole hookup with Kramer Guitars came. So I'm sitting there doing all this stuff for Kramer Guitars. They saw me play. The president of Kramer saw Floyd Rose himself saw me play and said, "I have to get you a full endorsement from Kramer Guitars." So he went to Dennis Berardi. Next thing I know, Dennis Berardi shows up at this store where I was giving lessons. He goes, "I understand I have to give you an endorsement." And I said, "Boy, I would love that." And this is when Eddie was the big guy for
Kramer.
Wait a minute.
I was on a phone call with Paul Reed Smith this week, and I said, "I want an endorsement. I have a fucking interview with Guitar World magazine with Nuno." And he goes, "Ben, I only decide if John Mayer is on. Like, I wouldn't have an artist relation person, Beverly. She wouldn't have a job. I got to send it to Beverly." And I'm like, "But Paul," he's like, "No, you got to talk to Beverly. She's the one that does this. You're just like Floyd Rose is like Kramer. I know you got this Eddie guy, Jimmy Bell." And I'm like begging Paul Reed Smith. He doesn't care. What the fuck?
Because he's actually a guitarist. That's impressive.
That was insane, Floyd. And then, so they have promo packages of me. And they're doing this and doing that. I got to turn this AC down a little bit. I'm dying in here.
Do you want to go to the DC? You want to go to the DC from the AC? AC to the DC?
It's a DC. I don't even think the air condition's on down here. So we're doing this. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call from Kramer because they're working with me. Even though I had no record deal or anything, they're working with me, and they said they called me up and said, "Jimmy, Jakey Lee is out of Ozzy. We want you to go and audition. We sent your tape to you need this? Okay." We sent your tape to Sharon Osbourne and she loves it. You have to go to California. And I said, "Okay, when do you need me to go to California?" next week? She goes, they said, no, today. You got to get on a plane. So I fly to California. I'm with Randy Castile and Phil, the bass player. And that's how you did the audition. Like, Ozzy wasn't going to sit through all the guitar players. So that I did my audition. And when I played, Sharon Osbourne sat there for my audition because she wanted to see if what she saw on the tape was what was there, you know, if I could do that. So I do the audition and I nailed it. I go back to my hotel room. I open my door. There's a young, beautiful Zach Wilde standing there with two Coca-Colas, you know, didn't look anything like a barbarian. Like he looked, you know, he was all, you know, clean shaved, and he had heard I was in the hotel, and he wanted to jam. He brought me a Coca-Cola and he says, "Hey, you want to jam?" So he had a little Rockman with headphones. Him and I plugged in it, and I was already warmed up. So I was wailing in there, and I must have really impressed Zach, because later on he sat at a guitar clinic, and I know this for a fact because a friend of mine was at the clinic. He says, "Yeah." He says, "There was this one guy named Jimmy Bell that auditioned that I didn't think I was going to get the gig after I heard him play." So that was really cool of him to say. But so
I'm going
to
be honest with you, I agree with him. Well, he shouldn't have gotten the gig, because I love Zach Wilde, but like, you have aged more like a fine wine than Zach Wilde has. Zach Wilde is more like a Jack Daniels in that he's just stayed stagnant doing the same things, and he's amazing at it. But I feel like you do what Zach Wilde does in the same school of, like, he's a ferocious picker too. He's one of those guys where you can hear him from the first second he plays. It's ferocious. But you do that ferociousness, but it has such a more unique element to it. Like, for him, it's like he's going through the same patterns in his mind where it's like, who knows where Jimmy's going? Who knows?
Yeah, no, I just go for it, man, you know. But you know, here's the thing. Then I, you know, so I come home, so anyway, I do my audition with Ozzy. Ozzy comes on the next day. Ozzy comes in, we change studios, and we go to a big studio. It had a massive stage on it, and I did five songs, including a guitar solo. And I sit down with them after, and they said, "Well, Jimmy, here's the deal. It's between you and Zach." And, you know, if they didn't like me, they didn't have to say, you know, say that, but they said, "It's between you and Zach." And they took me out to dinner at this really exclusive place. I went back to Ozzy's bungalow. Then Randy Castile took me to the Troubadour. It was just an amazing experience. But then I was on a plane on the plane home the next day. And, you know, I think they decided, they had already kind of started working with Zach originally. But, you know, so Zach kind of had that Randy Rhodes, you know, Les Paul, the blonde hair, that type thing. Somebody made a joke one time to me. They go, maybe they didn't take you because you're left handed. And Ozzy and Tony Iommi was left handed. And he didn't like, you know, Ozzy and Tony were really battling back then. I said, "Geez, you know, I don't really think that was it, but you know." Anyways, I'm home.
Do you think that Ozzy and Tony both want to like push you down? Because one thing I found out about you, and I'm going to out Black Sabbath, is you are one of the only human beings that was not in Black Sabbath to pen a Black Sabbath song. Am I correct? Was it Masters of Insanity? Is that the song? Yeah. So I want everybody to know that my all-time favorite Sabbath album, because I was not. Like, I wasn't influenced, like, again, with, like, I liked Van Hagar growing up because that was my time period, was Dehumanizer, because I grew up in the Wayne's World era, and I remember thinking that song Time Machine was stupid, but I loved Ronnie James Dio, so I went and bought the record, and I'm like, this is fucking awesome, and there was two songs that blew my mind, I remember, as a kid, Master of Insanity and Computer God. And I went and searched for bootlegs high and low to see if I could find, because they never released a live album with Master of Insanity. And I always wanted to hear how they were going to do it. And then years later, I find out Jimmy Bell forgoing his name, because he's like, I'll put it on the Sabbath record if it means changing it to Geezer or something, gave the song to Tony Iommi. Is this true? Like, what the hell happened? Please tell me the story.
Here's the story behind it. So anyways, going back just a little bit, I'm back home, disappointed. Next thing I know, my phone rings. I pick up, hello, this is English guy on the phone. He says, hey, this is Geezer Butler. And, I'm going like, yeah, Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath is calling me in Southington, Connecticut. Yeah, right. And he says, listen, I got your video from Sharon. I'm putting together a new project. It's a little lighter than Black Sabbath, but, I'm putting together this thing. So that's what happened. I end up, the Geezer flies me to England. We start working on stuff. I'm in the studio and, we had another song called Computer God as well. It's a whole different version of what was done on a thing. So, we're in this studio and Geezer comes up to me one night and says, do you have any songs that are similar to a Black Sabbath song that you write? And I said, well, yeah, I have this one I've been working on. So I played it for him. And I said to him, I said, I even have a title for it, but I don't write lyrics. I said, I thought of this title called Master of Insanity. I said, but I'm not a lyricist. So I played the song. We recorded it. Geezer wrote lyrics to my title. And the singer for Nazareth, Carl Sentence, he's in it. And Jez Woodruff was the keyboard player. He wrote Little by Little and Big Log with Robert Plant. So he played with Robert Plant, and the drummer from Eddie Money, Gary Ferguson, was in the band. We do a showcase. Here's another thing. So, you heard about the Ozzy thing. So we do a showcase and we get signed. We do a showcase in England. I go home. And I think it was supposedly MCA Records. And I get a phone call from Geezer's wife, Gloria. She goes, Jimmy, I have terrible news. The person who signed you, who signed the project, got caught doing something in the company. They fired him, dropped all his projects and everything. So two hits. Right in a row like that, that was a big thing. So months go back, Geezer joins Black Sabbath. Geezer joins Ozzy on a tour for a little bit. Next thing I know, phone call, Gloria Butler again. Jimmy, 1992, she says, Jimmy, I have some news for you. Black Sabbath is getting back together with Ronnie Dio, and we're going to use your song, Master of Insanity. And I'm going, yeah, this is great. I'm all excited. And she goes, but there's one problem. And of course, there's always a problem. So she says, Geezer has to say that he wrote the song because Tony Iommi will never let a song from another guitar player on a Black Sabbath record. So she says, Geezer will put your name in a special thanks and we'll pay you for the song after the tour. So what was I going to say? I said, okay, so Black Sabbath tours. I go see them. The song, the reviews come out on the record. It gets always mentioned as one of the better songs on the record. And they're playing the song live. So I'm going to see Black Sabbath in Boston at the Orpheum or wherever it was. And again in Hartford. And they're playing my song live. I'm watching Ronnie Dio, one of my favorite singers ever, sing a song that I wrote, and I can't get credit for it. So the tour is over. Never received a dime.
Oh my God.
Never got paid. No, nothing. All right.
Hashtag justice for Jimmy, I think is.
Yes.
So you're now being managed by your wife, Mandy, who's a saint and so smart. Yeah, we need to have her.
She steers me in the right direction.
Tell her to get you a Patreon, because you'll have a bunch of people like, listen to everybody. Listen to what Jimmy could have been. He's the greatest ever. And it's just like, he got fucked by the universe.
No, but wait a minute. Does anyone know this? I mean, yeah, that's, I had no idea. Wow.
Yeah. So here's the thing, though. So years go by. I it's so hard to tell people that you wrote a song on a Black Sabbath record in front. What do you mean you wrote a song? Yeah. Well, it doesn't right. say my name. I know it doesn't say my name, but I wrote all the music. I did this and I did this. All of a sudden, it starts appearing in books. There's a bunch of books written by Black Sabbath, and my name starts getting mentioned in it. So now, finally, last year, somebody sent me, there was a book, about 3 years ago, before Ronnie passed, somebody had done an interview with him in a book, and it took that long for the book to come out. Ronnie, they said to Ronnie Dio, they said, they're asking about the lyrics. And it says, I wrote the lyrics for most every song, with the exception of this one tune, Master of Insanity, which I absolutely love. It was written by Geezer Butler and a guitarist named Jimmy Bell. Right. And it's in writing that Ronnie Dio mentions my name in a book saying that I wrote the song.
From the holy man himself, from the man riding the tiger with the rainbow in the dark, Mr. Ronnie James Dio.
And
killing the king, because he's the man on the silver mountain.
Probably, you know, finally to get the recognition for that song. You know, and I always laugh. It's like, you know, I don't get why they didn't pay me for the song. It's like, what are they going to give me? A few thousand or, you know.
Yeah.
They got zillions of dollars. You can't pay me for one song. You know, it's kind of like.
Sure.
It's acknowledging that it's a real thing, though. That's the problem is you can't. It's like not looking at it. It's like, oh, it doesn't hurt. It's not bad if I don't look at it. It's not Jimmy Bell. It's not Jimmy Bell's riffs if I just pretend Geezer Butler wrote it.
Well, everyone watching and listening, go check it out and see.
No, it's funny, though, too. They recorded the song exactly the way that I recorded it. The only thing that's different in it is that Tony did a different guitar solo than me. But the whole everything from the song from the very beginning, I wrote the beginning, which is I wrote a bass beginning. I told Geezer, let's start it out with the bass, boom, 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 doing the riff, and then the whole band will join. So they did the song exactly like the demo. My demo is on YouTube. If you type Jimmy Bell, Master of Insanity.
Oh, I've seen it. It's awesome.
Yeah, you'll hear my demo version of it.
Well, but the thing is, the irony is, and I was trying to say this with the lyrics, is the lyrics are behind the lies, you will see the master of insanity. And I think what Ronnie James Dio was saying, behind the lies of Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler, you will see the real Jimmy Bell, the master of insanity.
Well, that would be nice, except Ronnie didn't write those lyrics. It was Geezer that wrote them. But still, that's a good
thing. No, I'm saying that, but you're the lies he's talking about.
Still. You're the true master of insanity.
Listen, Jimmy, incredible, incredible story.
It was so great to hear
you. Thank you. Thank you for hanging out with us.
I'm glad we finally got this. I'm sorry it took so long. I know our schedules got really hectic, but it just so happens that this weekend I'm home. And that's why I said, okay, let's make this happen now or else it might not happen.
Sure. No, we really appreciate it.
We actually had our buddy David Abruzzese from Pearl Jam, but wherever he is in the world, apparently they're having like Wi-Fi issues or something near the volcano by the spaceship. So like he has to I think his motor scooter went into like the universe. So like he's postponed last minute. We're like, fuck. And we've been trying to get you forever because you are on all three records. And I got to say, so since the beginning with Lost Symphony, you know, it's like, and I'm talking to, I want to say this, and I'm so excited about it. I'm talking to Guitar World with Nuno about Lost Symphony on Tuesday. And one of the biggest things for me always has been that we have these guys like Matt LaPierre or like Kelly or like Joey, and certainly you, that when you hear a guy like Marty Friedman or Nuno Betancourt or Jeff Loomis, they have these names like, we're like, no one could be as good as Jeff Loomis. And it's like, hold my water. Jimmy Bell is going to go sweat to the 90s, or I mean shred to the 90s. Right. Yeah, because the thing is anybody that listens to this record, one of these three records, I challenge you. And I love every one of these players for different reasons. But there is nobody in my mind, other than maybe when Bumblefoot comes in with the fretless guitar solo thing with the thimble. Like, you're like, okay, that's pretty distinct. But there's nothing more distinct on this entire record as far as guitar playing is concerned. In my mind, as far as from the first pick attack, you attack those notes like nobody else. It's Jimmy Bell, man. It's literally you.
It's a real Indeed. Honor to be on a project, and I can't thank you enough. You guys did an awful lot for me, and I know you do so much promotion on it. It really is an honor for me to be on this. And hey, you know, I'm ready for chapter 4. So
woo!
It's gonna have to happen. Yeah.
It's an honor to have you on it. Yeah. You inspire.
It's actually
all
chapter
of us.
11.
Yeah.
Don't say that yet.
Guys, check out jimmybell.com.
Autographband.com.
Yeah.
House of
Find
Lords.
Find him on social media.
Mass
he
Explosion.
Will answer you.
Oh, my name is right, Jimmy Bell, J-I-M-I.
J-I-M-I.
And I think you have some. Are there any tour dates in New England for Autograph?
I just did Mohegan. That was my first.
Oh, right, you're
my
right,
first,
right. Yeah.
Hometown show. There is one that keeps getting postponed. It's a, it's in Enfield, Connecticut. It got postponed obviously twice because of COVID. But it is happening in 2022, and it's Autograph, Vixen, and Slaughter together at the at the Enfield Town Green. And of course, that's something all sponsored by. The town of Enfield, so it's a free show. There's no charge for it, so it's like crazy. You could just come and stand in front.
Think I speak on behalf of all of us that if you ever have any cancellations or postponements, you could always come down to the studio and we'll put you to work.
Well, I'm ready to go to work. Actually, I'm going to be. I actually have to come down there because I'm getting a lot of calls for. You know, with House of Lords, I did all my recording over to drummer's house. He's the one that has the Pro Tools, and I never needed it before at 15 years, 16 years of recording records with House of Lords. I always did it. He lives 7 minutes away from me. But now that he plays for Dokken and I'm in Autograph and I'm getting all these calls from a lot of people, I actually have to pick up at this late of an age. I have to pick up my own recording gear, which I have no idea how to use. So I'm going to have you guys.
If we can help out in any way, man, let us know.
Just sure. Tell me the simplest way to sit and push the button and hit record.
It's hilarious you say that because you, so everyone knows, I was introduced to John. Well, I knew John Denae from Anthrax and Shadows Fall a little bit, but Jimmy Bell was the one that pushed him over the edge. Like, you should play on this record. It's going to be pretty freaking good.
He's a student.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the crazy thing is that you literally, everybody, like, you've been around for so long that anybody who plays guitar within like a 10,000-mile radius, they're like, oh, Jimmy Bell, it's like an innate sense in guitar players, but the world hasn't figured it out. And I remember when you came down, you're like, Benny, and you're the most humble, easygoing dude. And I looked right at Corey, and I said it about Joey Concepcion, and I said it about you. I'm like, these guys are going to be guitar heroes. And like 5 months later or something, Joey's playing some crazy festival in Belgium for Jeff Loomis, note for note with Arch Enemy. And then I want to say a few months later, you're like, Benny, I'm in Autograph. And I'm like, what? You're like, yeah, dude, I'm playing all these shows and like this, it's happening. And I'm like, so not surprised. And it's only a matter of time before the world, maybe 63 was the year for you. Maybe when you're 64.
It doesn't matter at the age thing. I guess, my age doesn't really matter as much as my drive. I have the drive and it's constant. You know, it never leaves my body. So it's as long as I keep that motion. The forward motion. I'm looking forward to whatever.
Perpetual motion.
Right on.
Inertia,
well,
yeah.
We wish the best for you and everything coming up and the good shows, and we hope we can catch you soon. And once again, thanks for hanging out, and we'll have to get to work on Chapter 4 for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
So check out everybody. 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast. And
thank you, Jimmy.
It was great to be
JimmyBell.com.
I hope to meet you in person sometime.
Yes, absolutely. I got to come see one of your shows. I'll look and see.
Well, I'm telling you guys right now that we all need to do an episode of The Neurotic Guitarist together. So we will find an excuse. Then, you just tell us when you're around.
Come up, when Savannah's at your house again, so we can at least just sit and chat next time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right.
It's been put forth to the universe. Yeah. And with that said, you've been 2020. Check out JimmyBell.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 99, featuring Satchel of Steel Panther. Check it out.
I will say this, too. I had the really awesome opportunity to meet Dio one time. And I played him a game of Miss Pac-Man. It was there, and he was like, "You want to play Miss Pac-Man?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll play against you." And he was like, he bragged. He said, "I'm pretty good, pretty good." And so I was like, I was a little scared. I was like, "Is he gonna kick my fucking ass in Miss Pac-Man?" Now he played his first man, and you know, lasted a little while, and then I got on, and I fucking destroyed it. I had the best game of Miss Pac-Man I've ever played. I think if he could have like shot lightning bolts out of his fingers, he would have killed me right there. Seriously. He was mad at me.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.